welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have a fabulous guest who's kind of in mid-afternoon for him, but kind of early for me. Adam Nelson's film is coming to our show. It's Emotional Motor Unit. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. It's great.
I want to start off, what influenced you to make the dullest world on the planet?
Well, it was in the script that Shenya wrote. She originally had it as a kind of almost like a wasteland, an apocalyptic wasteland. But we only had 10 grand to make the film. So obviously one of the first things you start to look at paring back is the really hectic effect shots. So we looked at it, and of course there's the sequence where he first steps out of the flat and it says he sees a post-apocalyptic wasteland, irradiated wasteland. And I was like, no, he's going to step out of a flat and see a really plain, dull, everyday, sort of almost alternative current day. Though, obviously, now, seeing people wander around in masks and so on and so forth is a far more common sight with what's going on. So maybe there's a bit of I forget the term, but maybe she saw things like that coming. But we... Yeah, so that's why it's as dull as it is, because we wanted to represent this kind of world that is very controlled, very sterile. Anything that can kind of evoke emotions has been sort of stripped back because, you know, people are harder to control when they have strong emotions. When people feel emotional about something, you know, they're leading with their heart, whereas when they think about things logically, they go from their brain, and the heart always wins out over the brain, in my opinion.
Okay, let's start right there. Your actor, main actor, and your unit, both do not show emotion. They're very quiet. They're very thing. Did you work with them? Did you work on that to make them not show, say, nope, we got to do this again. I want less emotion. I want it very quiet. I want it very slow-paced.
We talked a lot in the build-up. I like to work with actors in prep as much as I possibly can. And I was quite fortunate, because we had a bit of money up front, that we were able to do a couple of days just workshopping and talking. Francesca, who plays the Emotional Motor Unit, has a drama school background. So we had lots of interesting conversations about the character and how I wanted to portray the character. She did a movement workshop, for example, so that she could get all the articulation right, and that was really interesting. With Graham, we just had lots of conversations, and he's really good at kind of taking everything he needs from the script. So there were very few instances where I said to him, I need less from you. It was more as he develops his emotions, and towards the end of the film that we started to have to push him. It was like, okay, we need a bit more. And then at one point I pushed him and said, we need a bit more. And he went really far, and the DOP accidentally got hit by a chair. So at that point, it was like, all right, well, maybe we need to bring it back just a little bit from that. it was just about, it's about talking to them and working with them in advance as much as possible.
So you have a very small crew, I presume. I mean, you have some money. I mean, when you're setting up an apartment location, I mean, did you strip everything of color out of that apartment and go pick the bed sheets ahead of time, pick the cupboards, or did you have that all ahead of time? And I also want to include in that comment the mailbox and their clothes, if you can touch on all that, especially that shot with the mailboxes. It's all white. Did you set that up, or did you find that?
No, that was just a really lucky find. I chose the flat that we filmed in, or the two flats that we filmed in, because it's actually two. They were owned by the same person, and we rented both. The idea originally was that we would film in one and people would stay in the other, but the kitchen and the bathroom in the second flat, the bigger of the two flats, was better for what we needed than the kitchen and the bathroom in the flat we were filming in, so we picked everything up and moved it halfway through. But the mailboxes in particular in that building, I didn't know they were there until I went to look at the flat and get a feel for it. And as I walked down that corridor, I was just like, yes, this is ideal. This is absolutely spot on. And then we were very lucky. The apartments were very bare to begin with because they're Airbnb apartments. They're rented out for people to just stay in whilst they're staying in the city. So they were very bare. But we had to buy bedding so that it was grey. We bought the most plain, ordinary computer table we possibly could that we set up in the flat. But yeah, like one of the benefits was because it was an Airbnb and it was just designed for people to crash in overnight whilst they're staying in the city, a lot of it was very plain already. So we were very lucky in that regards.
Now, that really, I find, sets up the sterile environment you want. I mean, I really felt that there's no dating life in this world. Everything is controlled. I mean, you don't even give a name to your company. They're just called the company. Now, was there ever a name attached to it when you were direct? Was that dropped or you said, nope, we don't need that? Or how did that work?
That it was known as the company in the script. And I really, when I read it, I really liked it. I really liked that. It's because the film is my kind of love letter to sci-fi and the sci-fi films I loved. I know the company in Alien and Aliens has a name, but they refer to it as the company all the time. So I really enjoyed that kind of idea of a massive corporate entity that oversees everything and keeps control of everything that's going on. We had discussions about the backstory of the world. And I had ideas and Shenya had ideas and we kind of blended them together when discussing with the actors the backstory of the world. We talked a bit about whether the pollution in the air was real or whether or not it was whether it was a control mechanism to keep people focused and under control. And so that was an interesting discussion to have. I think ultimately, we went with the idea that it was real. But, you know, I can't say for sure that's what Graham was thinking when he was acting. Because like so much of it goes on behind the eyes for him because you can't see his mouth and so on and so forth. But I believe that the line, I decided that it was real as the director. But I'm very open to allowing the actors to interpret things themselves and to bring that to and their decisions to it. And unless it's really wrong and I really don't like what they're doing, I don't feel the need to course correct too much unless it's completely against what I'm trying to achieve with the scene.
Now, did the actors hear your music? Because, I mean, when the unit's introduced, it's the first time we really hear music in your picture. You kind of... It feels like a new flow. I'm watching something different. I think you were really going for that. Did you play the music for the actors ahead of time? Because I find it really changes the tone of the film.
No. The way I work with Imran, the composer, is I give him a script and then I say, right, I want you to come up with ideas just based off of the script. And Emotional Motor Unit was a really interesting one for him. Because some of the early demos that he sent me sound completely different to the final sounds that are in the film. His soundtracks are always constantly evolving over the course of the film until he can see an edited version of it. And even then, I don't like to show him an edited version of the film until the very last minute. Mm-hmm. I don't want him to feel that he has to compose to my edits. I just want him to do what he does. And that bit that's played when she first wakes up and is first introduced in the workshop, both of those were composed after we'd shot the film.
Now, when you're edit process, do you find it easy to edit or do you find you like to edit long first and then cut it down? Or do you like to have pretty close to a final cut when you go through your second time?
It was very different with Emotional Motor Unit to what I've done before. It was the first time that I handed everything to the editor. It was an editor who I knew was very good. I knew Cleo was very good, in part because I taught her. She was one of my students before we shot the film, and I knew she was good from the work I'd seen her do on the course. So when it came to picking an editor, I called her up and said, look, I've got this. Would you be interested in cutting it for us? Sorry, she'd moved on to university at that point, so she was in a different...
I guess I didn't do good background research because I didn't. What are you a professor of or teacher?
I used to teach filmmaking. I don't anymore. I work in a different sector of education now. But when I first started out, I used to teach filmmaking. But I've then, as I got more interested in making my own films, I found that working all day teaching film would mean I'd come home and I'd not want to work on anything when I got home. So I shifted to a different area of education after that. But, yeah, so I knew Cleo was good, so I trusted her to create, to work independently of the edit. I'd edited my first feature film, Little Pieces. I did the working print of that and then handed it to Becky to trim down. And I found that when I was editing it in that process, I didn't really gel with the process. It was a bit kind of odd. So I wanted to see what an editor would come up with and how an editor would piece it together. She had my notes, she had my shot list and the takes that I felt were the right takes to use. But, you know, when you hire someone because you want them to do the job rather than, you know, if I was going to sit over her shoulder and tell her exactly what to edit and when, I might as well edit it myself. So what you actually see with a motion memory unit is Cleo cut it. I went to watch it and said, yeah, that's great. And then about a week later, when I was prepping it to send out for sound mixing and making sure all the sounds are in the right place, there were little bits and pieces that I then further trimmed out. So the version that everybody sees of Emotional Motor Unit is actually the director's cut because it's my slightly trimming down of Cleo's version of the film. I think I took about an extra 30 seconds out.
Oh, well, that's not crazy.
No, it's not drastically different. It was just little bits that I felt hung on a little bit too long and such. But it's so yeah, that was an interesting experience. And then I worked on a film after Emotional Motor Unit, just to go off on a tangent a little bit, where that I was making that for someone else. It's the film I talked to Daniel about, Toilet Humor, and the producer had an editor in line for that. So all I could do was give the raw footage over to the editor. And he did a fantastic job cutting that. It was amazing. I'd done my own director's cut, and then I saw Jake's edit of Toilet Humor, and I was just like, yeah, he's done so much better a job of this than I have. So I've grown to really enjoy handing over the footage and saying to the editor, like, these are the takes I like, these are my notes, but let's see where this goes. Because I can always sit in the room, because it's all digital, we can always sit in the room and go back and go, no, actually, I prefer this take or I prefer this. That's kind of the benefit of it.
Throughout the film, I noticed it's very quiet film. Sounds pop out to me. That alarm clock annoyed the crap out of me. Whenever you would hit that noise, I'm like, so my question is here, how many alarm clock sounds did you listen to find that one? Because it is friggin' annoying.
Loads. And there were, in the library of sounds that I've got, there a lot of them were traditional alarm clocks with a really sort of loud bell. And it took me a long time to find a really small selection of digital alarm clocks. And then I looked for the most piercing, irritating one I could find because I wanted it to be a sound that would make someone get up and get out of bed because they had to turn it off. So again, it's that control thing, that idea of, you know, everyone has an alarm clock that does its job. It gets them up and out of bed and gets them moving. So yeah, I picked the most annoying one I could find. There were some quite pleasant ones, and it just, I didn't think that for the world I was trying to create, that didn't really work for me.
Okay. You have two main actors. You have a female lead and a male lead. Did you work with them? I want to get into more of their voice patterns, their movements. And, I mean, how much of the world did they know? Obviously, they get a script, and you said you worked with them. But, I mean, how much on their voice did you work, and how much on their actual hands? Because I find that the unit has a very movement different than your lead actor.
Yeah. Worked with Francesca a lot. In part because she really wanted to nail it and really wanted to get it right. Like I said, she did a movement class. I paid for her to do a movement class. And then she sent me the footage of what they were doing in the movement class because I wasn't able to be there at the time. And I then sort of corrected it and adjusted it based on that. And initially the movements were very direct and robotic. And I said, no, it needs to be slightly more articulated, but very slow and deliberate, you know, mechanical in that sense. And then her voice, we worked on quite a bit because I wanted her to have a calming voice and a voice that doesn't have too many emotions, because she's learning as much as he is as it goes on. So the emotions are things that she not only learns, but teaches him as well. It's a really complicated relationship. But I also wanted her to sound slightly like a child, because we, in the script, it comes across as quite a romantic relationship. Mm-hmm. But because of the age gap between Graham and Fran, I decided that I wanted it to be more like a sort of father-child relationship instead. And so I wanted her to have her voice to have that kind of almost childlike aspect to it, curious childlike aspect to it. So we did a lot of talking about that. With Graham, it was slightly less so. I've found when I've been working with actors that some of them like to prepare a lot and they like to go really in depth. And the film we're working on now, it's quite interesting because the three main actors in that all want slightly different things. Mm-hmm. So like my job is to make sure that they each get those very different things, and then I have to balance that when we finally get on set. Graham doesn't like to prepare lots and lots in advance. He likes to wait until the day and get there and to see how it works and feel it out. But he does a lot of work taking everything he can from the script. He breaks down the script quite a bit. Whereas Fran wanted lots of questions. And Finn, who is one of the supporting characters, he does very little prep. He turns up and goes for it. And then I have to really kind of work with him on the day to figure out quite where we are, because that's his style of working and that's what he likes to do and that's how he likes to be. So, yeah, it's about kind of giving the actors what they need to be able to do their job as effectively as possible, not smothering them if they don't want to do too much prep. But those who do want to do too much prep, not too much prep, but a lot of prep, making sure that they feel supported and guided through the process so that they're not abandoned and just left to figure it out as they go.
I know you didn't write this, but I wanted your opinion since you directed it. One of the lines is, not a writer, an author. My question is there really a difference?
I think so. I think a writer is anyone who writes, whereas I think authors deal almost entirely in the fictional realm. So a writer can be someone who writes factual work or article work or textbooks or information leaflets, things like that. Whereas an author, I think, deals specifically with the fictional. That's not to say one is more important than the other. In our world, but in that world, to be an author, because everything has to pass the regulators and the censors, they're very selective about who their authors would be.
I can see that. Now, you're very selective in your use of color. Now, I do notice color first comes in, you can correct me if I'm wrong, when the unit is introduced, her eyes, I've noticed that, like maybe a purplish blue. It was only a quick second, and I'm really annoyed with you. You didn't let me focus on that, but I think that was your point, to notice that something's changing in the world. Is that a hint for the viewer, or you cut it quick so I wouldn't pay attention to it?
You're absolutely right. We were very selective with color. I wanted it to feel gray and oppressive and sterile in the opening before the robot turns up, so that you would experience like the world as he sees it. And then as he lives with the robot for that brief period, and he comes to realize what it is to share something with someone else and to have emotions and to be able to sort of process those and convey those, I wanted his life to sort of bloom in color so that you suddenly realize that there's more dimensions to this world than, but without it being the easiest choice would have been to have it black and white, then colour afterwards, but I felt that that was a bit too on the nose. But yes, it's very deliberate that we start introducing colour at that point, and the use of colour grows as his sort of mental state changes, if you will.
Now, I want to discuss the makeup. Did you have, like, it looks like a white powder or something on everybody's face. Now, did you experiment with different levels of white, or was it always just like a light ghosty white? Like, they're kind of like ghosts, it seemed at times. Were you portraying that his world is a ghost? Like, he literally just goes through time?
Yeah, it's about showing that in this kind of future or this alternative present where they live, that colors and emotions and all that, where they're so regulated and so controlled, the idea is to keep everyone the same so that they don't, there's no variety. Because again, it's easier to control people. If everyone's exactly the same, it's easier to control people and keep people controlled. So that's what it was about. And then you'll notice throughout the film, as he spends more time with Emu, we put less of the makeup on Graham. And then at that turning point when he experiences all his emotions come out at once, we put more of it on to sort of really show that he'd gone through that barrier and it was coming out of the other side. It was almost like it had made him ill. Experiencing these emotions had made him ill. But through recovering from that experience, he then, in the final sequence, Finn looks very pale because we've got more colour in the shot just in general because the saturation levels are up. But also, Graham doesn't have too much pale makeup on at all as for the colour. So Finn looks really pale because he's still stuck in that sort of past existence where, you know, everything's controlled, everything's rigid, and he's part of overseeing that. Whereas Graham is... not full of life. It's almost like it's had the opposite effect. He's realized that life as it was isn't worth living. And that's just portrayed, you know, we did a lot of work with that on portraying that by putting more color in. You know, he doesn't wear his suit, his shirt buttoned up and tied up. It's relaxed, it's open collar. He's more slouched in the seat. He's not really listening to what's going on. And then, of course, the sound fades out. So we brought all those elements in together to make them work, to show that he is not the man he was when he first sat in that office chair and got his assignment.
Okay. You did harp on a couple things that are said in the film. I think Graham says, security is number one, entertainment is number two. So what is entertainment in this world? Did you even get a chance to look at that? Because, I mean, it's really, is a unit the only entertainment they have? I was trying to fish in for more there, but... As a filmmaker, I don't think you had that option to give me more in such a short period.
No, not in that period of time. It's about making sure I think Shenya took a lot from the Aldous Huxley book. I forget his title.
Brave New World.
Brave New World, that's the one, yeah. She took a lot from that, this idea that the entertainment that people are allowed to experience is very controlled, and that's what makes them feel good and happy and keeps them going on in their work, in their daily life. And it's him as an author is doing that. That's why he gets promoted to being an author as opposed to just a writer, because his job is to now provide that entertainment that will keep people under control and keep people focused. It's like it's like propaganda on a massive scale. And then, and then security is number one because, you know, when she wrote it, Shenya was living in America at the time. And obviously a lot of money is spent on military in the US and such.
So I do want to focus on something else. At one point you have a shot of over his shoulder at the medicine cabinet. You see him reaching up to grab the pills. You have very much different colors of pills. I want to focus on what were the pills and what did you experiment as the pill colors?
So the pill colors, they were the production designer that we worked with in the very early stages of the film, who unfortunately had to move on before we could fully film it. She bought the pills. She bought multicolored pill capsules that were empty, but they're the gelatin capsules, so Graham could take them and not do any serious harm to himself. We had the different emotions, and we tried to pair the colours of the pills as best we could, because we didn't really have a lot of control over the colours of the capsules. Like if we could order like the primary colours and a couple of secondary colours, but we couldn't have them make things specifically for us. So we tried to pair the capsules as best as we could to the colours that people often associate with those emotions. And yeah, the idea of the pills is that they, if you're feeling a specific way, you take that pill and it brings you back into the neutral, controllable zone. So if you're feeling anxiety, you'll take an anxiety pill and it brings you back into. And that's, you know, that's a comment on how, you know, as a society, we like to try and fix our problems with our emotions with medicine all the time. And, you know, just wondering whether or not that's always the healthiest approach.
So when you do the pill drawing on the floor, whose idea was that? Was that even in the script, or is that
something? That was in the script. That was in the script, and that was really quite fascinating. The production designer who I mentioned before, she had to struggle. She struggled really hard to find flesh-colored pills that we could use for the skin tone. But that was in the script. It was one of my favorite kind of moments in the script, because it shows that she's learning about what it is to be human by replicating. Because that's, you know, that's one of our most human sort of things. I think we replicate our emotions, we replicate how we feel through the things that we create and the things that we put out into the universe. Be they creative projects like films or just like how we express ourselves. And that's her expressing this kind of learned humanity by recreating this picture of him. But she can't replicate herself, because there's no violet pills for her eye colour. And then the irony of that, of course, is that when she's sent away, he's then given those violet pills as the thing that is meant to bring him back into line to do his job.
Who had to do the pill thing? How hard was it to do it on the floor?
Shenya, who was my first AD on the set as well, she did it with Fran. They both did it together to sort of build to get it done quickly. It was the first thing we shot in the second flat, so I was busy helping everybody move stuff to the set. And so Shenya and Fran did it together on the floor. We didn't want Graham to see it. We wanted him to see it for the first time when they went in. And of course, it's very childlike in how it's done. It really drives home that kind of sense of like she's a child learning how to be an adult, essentially, rather than romantic. In the script, it looked a bit more, it was written a bit more detailed, but they made it very childlike, and it was really good.
So when the short goes outside, did you even find it strange as a director? I mean, the whole movie is sterile, it's inside. And boom, now we're outside. That added a whole new dimension for me, the viewer. How about you as a director? Did that add a new dimension for you? Did you feel different filming this? Because you had filmed inside for so long.
I think because we filmed inside for so long, that was probably my favorite bit to film, the bit where they're outside. The shots of him going outside for the first time were very quick pickup shots that we did. But the scene where they're outside together, I think that was one of my favorite bits to film, just because we were outside. We weren't stuck in like tiny rooms filming. You know, you don't realize how small a room can be until you've got like eight people trying to stuff themselves into it. And they can only use a part of that room because everything's happening in front of the camera. So I was definitely starting to feel like the wear and tear of that by the time we got to shoot that bit. So I felt really refreshed to be outside, and the scene itself was, we filmed it longer there's a whole sequence where they walk around before she starts touching the leaves and starts talking to him. And she really walks around and experiences the world. But that was one of the first things that Cleo dropped, because she felt that like that moment should be special and feel very special. And like the really good stuff that we got was the stuff by the trees. Yeah, I think it's refreshing. It was refreshing the film, definitely, because we'd all been inside for so long. And obviously it seems like you can feel that as you watch it.
Do you feel that you allowed your characters or made them feel that touch was a big thing for the viewer? I guess maybe I should go that way. I really felt touch is huge in this universe. If something is touching something, you feel it.
Yes. Because for me, we're in such a controlled world and we're very tactile creatures, humans. And it's especially interesting for me because I'm actually not very tactile. I don't like to be touched. I'm very peculiar like that. So I think I really emphasize the touch stuff as a kind of playing off of that. Because for me, like when you touch someone, it should be quite special. And it brings on a lot of emotions, like be it comfort or discomfort or anything like that. So I imagined a world where people didn't get to touch very often and didn't get to touch anything outside because it could be dangerous. So, you know, they didn't know what it was like to go outside and touch a tree or, you know, feel water on their skin or anything like that, unless it was inside, away from everybody else. Part of the fun of the making it was kind of imagining the wider implications of the world. And I imagined that, like, even down to, like, reproduction, it would be a very mechanical process.
Okay, leave your film there for the thing. Go check it out, but we'll tell you at the end of the thing. Now we're going to move on to everybody's favorite part of my show, your fun questions.
Okay.
I know you've done some prepping for this because I sent them to you ahead of time. your favorite sci-fi film, please?
Blade Runner.
Both kinds? Original or new one?
I like the final cut. I think that he got it as right as he's going to get it on the final cut. I don't dislike the older cut. I kind of like the noir feel to it, but I do feel that the recent cut, the final cut, feels more comfortable. It feels like it's the film Ridley wanted to make rather than like a compromised version of his vision.
Now, you influence as a director. I mean, obviously you filmed other things other than this. I mean, you come from a film teaching background. What are some of your influences?
I'm really fascinated in terms of filmmakers. I'm really fascinated with Paul Thomas Anderson. I think he's brilliant. I'm really fascinated with directors that look at people and relationships between people. That's what interests me as a filmmaker, particularly at this level, because that's kind of all I can really get to do at this point is films that focus on relationships. However, I would be lying if I said that I also didn't want to make big action films like those made by, say, Christopher Nolan, because I love those types of films, and those are also the films I grew up watching when I was younger. So I've got quite a wide range of influences. Paul Thomas Anderson really comes out as one. I like Christopher Nolan. Like I say, I find his films really interesting. Stanley Kubrick is kind of like the go-to. I really like what he does. What he did, rather. But I find that I move into whatever the project is, I move into other filmmakers that I find influencing that project. So at the minute, I'm quite influenced by Danny Boyle and David Fincher and what they do, particularly in their work with Sorkin. Because the film we've got at the minute is a lot of people in rooms talking. So we're looking at films that also have a lot of people in rooms talking to figure out how to keep that dynamic and fresh and interesting.
Okay, your last question is very easy. Your favorite food?
Favorite food? Pasta.
Now, before we let you go, we got to tell everybody where to find everything you've done, not opposed to just this film.
Yeah. So, both Emotional Motor Unit and Little Pieces are on Amazon. They're not on Prime, unfortunately, so you can't stream them, but they are available for fairly, what I feel, a reasonable rental prices. So you can find them on Amazon.com.
Thank you for your time and have a great day.
You too. Thank you very much.